Welcome to the Sailor Noob Podcast, where a superfan and a noob talk about the original Sailor Moon, episode by episode. I'm your host, Mikan Hana, joined by my co-host.
I'm the co-host, Caliban, also the noob, and today we turn the rabbit into Jessica Rabbit.
Oh boy, yeah, do we. And we're a couple of magical people ready to moon crystal power make up this episode. Today we are talking about episode number 85. Ankoku no Jo, Buraku Reiri no Tanjo in Japanese. The Dark Queen, Birth of Black Lady, the English translation, and the English title, Birth of Wicked Lady.
Oh, she loves show tunes. She's, I don't know, she's
this is before
popular.
Wicked,
she's popular.
But, yeah.
Got it. All right.
Okay.
Whew. That was like, I had to like push some stuff off the desk, a cloud of dust, go back, third drawer, bottom left,
yeah.
Underneath a mousetrap was popular.
Oh, gosh,
the
I don't.
Lead single. Character song from the musical Wicked.
I'm not super familiar
with
Wicked.
Well, then you're not impressed, and it doesn't matter.
But my sister would be impressed.
Okay,
she
well, get
Wicked.
Her in here.
Okay, all right.
we're gonna get into it.
Yeah, we are.
There's a term I want everybody to remember. It's gonna sound crass, and it's gonna rhyme with crass.
Mm.
But it's forced ass.
Wow, okay.
And we'll explain what it means later.
Okay.
When the time is right.
All right.
But instead, just think of that forced ass.
I'm just...
You know, like unforced errors in baseball? Oh, this is an unforced error.
I don't...
This is a forced ass.
Oh my God. I'm sorry. I just think of the chocolate, and the Japanese chocolate, which
no,
is called...
You better hurry up.
Which is called A-S-S-E, but it just looks like ass.
Oh, right. Assy chocolate.
And, yeah. And my friends and I would be like, 18 individual pieces of ass. You know?
It tastes like ass.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you're like, oh, I ate ass for breakfast. You know, it's just like... The jokes were endless and we were so childish about it.
Oh, that's the funniest you've ever been.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. There you go.
I like it.
If you like funny stuff, you might like
okay.
Our Patreon.
That's one of the roughest transitions you've ever done, but okay. All right.
So some good, some bad. Come see, come
yeah.
Down.
The old Patreon.
Yeah, the old Patreon, where we recently have been watching episodes of the live-action Pretty Guardian Sailor Moon on our Patreon show, Pretty Guardian Sailor Noobs.
Yeah, don't think about it too much.
No.
It'll confuse you.
We're both noobs.
It's been fun, though.
Yeah.
You know, and I've learned more about mid-2000s Japanese juniors fashion than I ever thought that I would.
Oh, boy, me too.
But it's been worth it.
Yeah.
And if I ever have to, I don't know, if I get tapped to costume design a period accurate Sailor Moon musical, then I'll be right in there.
Okay.
I'll be like, give me those Daisy Lovers right now. I want to see those cute and sweet smiles.
Just a little bit of English and we're good to go.
Yes.
Super cute. Maybe some pandas, some bunnies,
yeah.
You know, we're all good to go.
Random woodland creatures.
Yes, exactly. But they have to be kawaii, so that's important. And we also have another Patreon show called Animetification, where we watch the pilot episode of a randomly selected anime.
Yeah.
It
gets across what we're trying to say, but it's slightly inaccurate to call it a pilot episode because
fair.
I don't think... As far as I know, like the way the anime studio system works,
they
every anime is completely sold through, right? So
yes.
They're not making one.
That's correct.
You know, the point of a pilot, I won't do the whole Pulp Fiction scene, is that you make it and then they decide whether they want to make a show out of it or not. But like when
right.
You start making an anime, it's already paid for. Well, it's already commissioned whether or not it's paid for.
Right.
As you know, many Hideki Anno shows have run out of money. It's just going to be all pencil drawings now. But it's psychological, man.
we'll make up for it in the next movie.
But it's the first episode. And the point is that we haven't seen them. Sometimes we have. But they're mostly stuff that we haven't seen. Maybe that you haven't seen, listener. Yes. And we are getting our impressions from the first episode. And so it's partially a celebration of anime in all its forms. But it's also really like 50% like evaluating... pitches.
Yep.
Like, how well do you sell me on this show in the first, hour? Or how can you, how well are you telling me what this show is?
Are you hooking and reeling me
and
in?
The missing 25% of already missing 50%, because I only said, I don't know what the missing 25% is, but the missing 25% is, I guess we don't ever watch on to see if we were right or not. So like when I watch Black Lagoon and I go, if it's going to be 18 more hours of this, I don't want to watch Black Lagoon.
Right, right, right.
But maybe Black Lagoon just doesn't know how to sell itself in an hour. And you've got to like, you know, you always hear like, oh, it gets good. It gets good. And I found that most shows that people tell me get good, never get good. But at the same time, you can't watch the first season of Game of Thrones and then watch the third season of Game of Thrones. And you can't compare those in terms of your investment. You have to watch the first season of Game of Thrones.
I mean, that's true. Absolutely.
What was this about again? So anyway, our Patreon. At patreon.com/sailornoob.
Yes. So, Cal, would you like to give us a breakdown of our episode?
I'm going to break down as I tell you about the episode.
Okay.
But I will have to do that.
Okay.
I don't have a choice. I'm forced. Like an ass.
Oh.
We open, as always, on the ruins of Crystal Tokyo.
Yeah.
Focusing specifically on the palace atop the city's central spire. Got that. And everyone is looking for Chibiusa, who's gone missing. Everyone except King Endymion, I guess. They couldn't pay the Mamoru voice actor twice for this one, so he's just not in this.
I don't know.
Like, it's just his kid. That's fine.
Luna P is, like, looking,
are we
but
heading
Endymion
up
isn't
to,
there?
There Will Be Blood? You know, I've abandoned my child! I've abandoned my daughter! Kind of thing.
I don't know. I find it very frustrating that, like, present Mamoru seems to be a better parent figure than Endymion.
It raises questions.
Yeah.
And this episode just asks the questions later on. And we're already getting into it. There are things that happen later that make you go, huh, maybe, but not. And anyway, we'll get to it.
Okay.
Tuxedo Mask, who is not Chibiusa's dad, suggests, let's split up. And everyone does to try and find Small Lady.
Mm-hmm.
In the Black Moon Clan base from last episode, Creepy Wise Guy in the flesh sits and rubs his ball as Chibiusa floats in the air in front of him, helpless. He says, memories of an abominable past leave scars upon the heart. How did everybody turn out after watching this episode? I wonder. I know what my scars are. Anyway, he says, remember your mean-spirited mother and your cruel father? And he waves his hands around, and we go into Chibi's mind. And I'm getting really comfortable in here. And we see a vision, perhaps a memory, of Chibi walking in the rain with the queen and king.
Mm-hmm.
Chibi's having a good time. She sees a frog, and she's like, yeah! She runs after it, but she trips, and she slides like a good 6 feet on her face.
Oh, she plants. Just
right
his
on her face.
Plants.
And she's totally shocked at first, like a little kid. Then she starts to cry. And the queen bends down to her to say, get up, you little idiot.
Oh my God, I know.
Or something to that effect.
Yeah.
And Chibi's like, I hate you, mom. And the king's like, get up by yourself. And Chibi's like, what? And we see Wise Guy's hands as they continue to rub the ball. And dark energy swirls around Chibi as she seems to get 1% more grim.
Uh-huh.
Wise Guy says, remember the many crappy things that happened to you. And we see Chibi in front of the palace, and she's approached by the four sailor ladies. It's interesting because you can tell they've changed their looks a little bit because now they're the elder, you know, woman soldiers. So they're less round and cartoony. They're a little longer.
Uh-huh.
The Takeuchi stretch.
Sure, sure.
And they're usually all, they have those like eyelashes that are like drawn onto their cheeks, you know?
Yes.
Those are gone. They just look smoother. They're just kind of smoother.
Sure,
But they're definitely supposed to be women.
Right.
Chibi says, it's my birthday, but mom and dad are away for work. They have a space business trip?
I don't
know. Where are they?
I don't know.
Jupiter says, yeah, I don't think they're going to make it back today. And Chibi cries. Just then, this is a weird moment. Mm-hmm. We can talk about it later.
Yeah.
Just then, Ray says, why don't we do the birthday? But Jupiter cuts her off like, ugh! It's weird. Mm-hmm. And the sailors are like, okay, bye. And they just leave.
Yeah.
So in the present, Chibi's like, yeah, they forgot my birthday. And she begins to see everyone in her life as cold and unloving.
Yes.
Wise guy says, turn your hatred on this world. Destroy it. And Chibi gets a real Damien look as the energy courses around her. Wise guy's eyes light up. He's got eyes. The confirmation.
Yes, exactly.
And his ball explodes. And the dark energy surrounds Chibi, changing her. We see her get bigger and longer.
Uh-huh.
Oliver gets bigger.
Yes.
And a black moon appears on her forehead.
Mm-hmm.
We pull back out. We see that she's adult size now in a flowing pink and black dress with long pink hair and a jewel-studded dog collar.
Yep. You got it.
What is happening? And please, please, please tell me why the show, and I can't wait for Subaru or Dabu, why the show needs us to know that she's got boobs. And a kind of a boot, too. Kind of got to kind of force an ass in there, don't we?
Oh, yeah.
And we go for like 3 seconds on this ass. And then we go up to the boobs, and they're not just there, like they're growing. Like it isn't just that she went behind a screen, you know, and then came out and she was a different person or a bigger person. Like, we have to see everything happen. And I don't understand why that is.
Yeah, we have to see her ass grow, too.
Yes, I don't understand why that is.
I don't either.
Forced ass thing is, anybody who watches anime on the computer knows about ASS files. It's an extension, and it's files that are created with like a program like Substation or Aegisub, which, you know, create subtitles for anime.
Right,
so like,
yes.
So the anime that we're watching a version that has like a fan sub on there. And so somebody, you know, types everything in and it's a program that times it all out. And it's very useful.
Yes.
But for some reason, the extension isn't RIR or EXE.
No.
It's ASS. And when you force the titles on, it's called forced ass.
Yep.
So I just thought of that as I'm like watching this 6/20-year-old's ass being shoved in my face. I'm like, this is a forced ass.
This is a forced ass. And then I also like sometimes you get the unknown forced ass.
Sometimes you get some unknown ass.
You're like, whoa, watch out.
Yeah. Goes with your chocolate ass, too.
Yeah, right.
So while this is going on, the cops aren't on their way. But in the throne room, the evil Black Crystal is putting out some immense power. But nobody seems to be paying any attention to that. I don't know what's going on in this organization at this point, but DeMando is just sitting there.
Like, he doesn't notice.
This thing is just blazing behind him. And
I know.
He's just like, okay. Wise Guy appears before DeMando and says, the rabbit is now the servant of the evil Black Crystal. She is the queen of darkness. And Chibi says, I am Black Lady. We didn't want to focus group that one at all?
Yeah. I think we can definitely... we'll definitely talk about that.
All right. At least we're getting some diversity on the show.
We'll put a pin. We'll put a pin in that one and come back to it.
All right. Well, here's another couple pins.
Okay.
Wise Guy says, DeMando, immediately go back to the Tokyo of the past. Black Lady's power will manifest, and you can take control of the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
So, wait. So they want to take control of the Earth in the past? Stop. Stop it all.
Yeah.
Stop it all.
Yeah.
Let's just go through this. Here's where I thought that we were, okay? Number one, Chibiusa, in an effort to get the silver crystal so she can wake up her mom and defend future Tokyo from the BMC, because her crystal's gone, she does a reverse Terminator. Actually, you know what? No, she does an Avengers Endgame. She goes back in time to get the stone from the past.
Yes.
And then maybe she's heard about Sailor Moon, maybe get her help, but she's really there for the crystal.
Yes.
And she uses Sailor Pluto's time-traveling power to do it.
Yes.
Number two, the Black Moon Clan, through some time travel power of their own, goes back in time to kill the rabbit because they're gunning for the whole royal family, Anastasia style.
Yes.
They need to get rid of all these people.
Yes.
But also, the Silver Crystal is somehow mentioned to Wise Guy at that point, comes back and tells them to find the Silver Crystal.
Yes, correct.
Because I guess they didn't find it in the future.
Yes.
Number three, at some point, probably after Rubaeus' death, the bad guy mission changes to destroy Tokyo in the past, and we won't have to worry about the future. That's it. We win. Classic Skynet scenario.
Yeah, that's Esmeralda's plan with the Dark Henges.
Number four. While that plan is changing, Chibi decides that it's not enough to just try and get the crystal in the past, because she tries to get it on her own and realizes that she can't wield it or it's you know, Sailor Moon needs it.
Right.
She also knows that she needs the Sailor Soldier's help to win in the future.
Yes.
So let's all go to the future. That's a Tomorrow War situation.
I'm not even tracking all of these comparisons that you're adding in here, but I
but
think it's
now we've got number five.
Uh-huh.
The bad guy plan is just to go back in time and take control of the Earth in the past.
Yes.
And then we have victory in the future. That's a Star Trek First Contact.
Huh. Okay. All right. Yeah.
But there's a secret number six.
Oh my God.
Because in reality, Wise Guy just wants Chibi to destroy everything and just leave the universe in darkness, which is like a Dragon Ball villain idea. Just destroy everything! It's like, well, don't you live in everything?
I hate everything.
It just
so
wants chaos and
everything.
Destruction. Yeah.
Some men just
so
like dwarfs.
So I just, I know that there's, okay, all right, great, Alfred. I know that there's like, you know, people change their plan when circumstances change.
Yeah.
But these are the six phases that I have identified here that I'm not sure the writers were totally consistent on.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? Sometimes a character's doing something and you don't know why, and then you realize later on, oh, they knew about this thing the whole time. But
right.
This just seems to be, we're going to do this because that way we can have conflicts and droids and fights and ice cream. And then later on, it's like, but no, we wanted to do this. It's like, but that the thing you were doing before completely undercuts the plan that you were going to do later.
I think that that's those are all valid points. God, I feel like it's hard taking a manga and like trying to expand it into, you know,
yeah, I guess
an anime series that's like 40 episode plus long, like R is, even though we had the Aelin on for like the first couple episodes. But
yeah,
I feel like they could have done it in a more interesting way.
And the Aelin on thing was shorter, but we're already doing the postmortem. But I think it made sense ultimately more because sure, there's a lot of messing around. Sure, there's not only do we want to do each other, but we've also found these two human counterparts that we want to do.
Yeah.
But in the end, you realize that it's what we're dealing with in this episode. We're just going to stop and just do the final thing now before the recap's even over. it also happens in this episode because this episode is playing with the idea of how the way that you're raised turns you into the person that you are.
Yes.
And we are manipulating that. You know, that's what Wise Man's doing.
Yes.
But in Aelin On, like, they were just literally raised on this planet where everybody was killing each other and they were all trying to suck the energy out of the tree or whatever. I've forgotten already. The tree created them.
But the tree created
them. But then
the
people
them.
Went to, they created nuclear weapons and started killing each other. And so they learned that the only way to survive was to just reave and take everything that
take
you can.
Take what you need.
And so that's, right. And then the sailor soldiers showed them a different way. And so that all makes sense.
Yeah. And now
there's just some really weird stuff in the middle.
Yeah. Now they're going to take the sapling and that will grow.
Well,
and
I really hope that they land this one.
Yeah.
Every time I doubt, it's like the rose. It shows up. You know it's going to show up 20 minutes in. It still happens and you're surprised.
Yeah.
Every season I completely doubt the show and it always proves me wrong. So... fingers crossed. They disappear. Wise Guy and Chibi disappear. And Demando, he's excited about this revenge part.
Mm-hmm.
But Saphir shows up and says, hey, newsflash, Esmeralda trusted Wise Man, and she dead.
Yeah.
So, but Demando's like, because of Earth, we were forced to live on this crappy goo world. I'd give a million Esmeraldas to destroy Earth.
Uh-huh.
Wise Man gave us a ton of info and the evil Black Crystal. So this guy's totally on the up and up. If I can't trust him, who can I trust? You've lost the plot, my friend.
I know.
Hey, I met this guy drowning some puppies, and he's going to dog sit for me this weekend.
It's like, no!
You can't trust this guy.
No!
Demando says, look, and he brings up a hologram of the future soldiers guarding this core of Crystal Tokyo.
Yes.
Which we still don't really understand, but I think
I don't either.
He says, we can't get past these chicks now, so we got to take over the past. We create the Dark Gate with the help of Black Lady. So you stay here, protect the reactor and the evil Black Crystal, bro.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And it works. Saphir seems like he's back on board. Mm-hmm. It's all he needed. Yes. Back at the palace, Sailor Pluto appears to our heroes and says that Chibiusa has traveled to the past, and so has Demando. Seems like the Guardian of Time could have done something about that, but that's been a problem this whole time.
I think, like you said, that the Black Moon Clan has their own way of traveling back to
the past. She's really the guardian of this door, this specific door of time. If you've got a DeLorean, she can't do crap.
Well, she knows if somebody has traveled in time.
Yeah, all right.
And she can
She's
help.
She's guarding the knowledge of her uselessness.
She can help the good people, but the bad people aren't going to go through her.
Well, if the bad people aren't going to follow the laws, what are the laws for? RoboCop.
Oh, my God.
She says that Small Lady has changed, but she doesn't really get specific.
I don't think she knows.
Like, well, if she could have said that she's, you know, going through a Hot Topic phase or something like that. I mean, I like Pluto, but the crypticness is kind of getting in the way.
She, just as a footnote here, and I won't say much about this because I know you hate when I bring up the manga, but... she has a much larger role in this arc in the manga, and I love it so much. And I really wish that they had found a way to put that in the anime more, because it's just not really present. Yeah. And
I wish I could share that with you.
Yeah, and you get to know her character a little bit more, and you feel... I really love Pluto, and I hope that someday you will feel the same. Anyways, continue.
She's just some chick with a stick.
It doesn't do anything. But it's the coolest staff. Anyways.
Well, she uses it to open the door to the past, and all our heroes travel to the past. Mm-hmm. So, future time's over, I guess. That was it. They're blown by the winds of time backwards. So, it's easier to go to the past, I guess.
Apparently, it seems that way.
Because the wind blows that way.
Yeah.
Now, is it because it's already happened?
That's a good point, maybe.
Because, I mean,
yeah.
You know, obviously, if you don't care about Paradox, and I'm not sure that we do here, we still haven't really come down. I'm waiting for the end, but... it seems like changing the past would be a real problem, mm-hmm. because it could change the future, mm-hmm. but maybe it's already happened, and maybe there's an energy to things that have not yet happened, you know, going to the future is a force that you have to push against to get to the future. I've never really seen that in time travel before.
No. And you know, you brought up I think it was like last week, like whether or not anything was going to happen when they tried to interact with their future or past selves. And in the manga, Usagi, when she is close to Neo Queen Serenity for a little bit too long, her hands kind of start to fade. So she does like a Back to the Future, and like Endymion's like, oh, I should have mentioned, like, you can't. And he's, you know, space ghost from coast to coast, so you know it's not a problem for Mamoru, because he's like I don't know, he's kind of like a phantom figure, but but he's like you know, you can't be too close to your future self, you know, it's you know, paradox sort of thing.
Yeah, sure.
So like basically he had to kind of send them away from
I had a phantom dad. Didn't see him much. He went out to get some ghost cigarettes and never came back.
Aww.
Well, anyway, you'll never get the answer from Pluto. But Mamoru basically says right out, quick question. What actually happened after Usagi and I got together? Like, the earth froze?
Yeah,
like,
right.
What kind of catastrophe was that? Mm-hmm. And Pluto's like, just worry about that later. You don't want to know what happens in the future.
I know.
But here we go. She can only say that because whatever this calamity is, if they stopped it, maybe she wouldn't be in the same position to say, don't think about it.
Right.
Paradox.
Right.
And, you know, I already know some things that are coming that I'm not supposed to know. So clearly, I don't think the show cares too much, but maybe we're just trying to, this is the thing with time travel storytelling. It's like, let's just keep this. Because she could say stuff, but that's going to ruin what comes.
It's going to change.
And it might affect what they do in the future.
Yes.
So we're just not going to worry about that.
Right. You don't want to mess with fixed points in time. I don't even know if they're going to get to that.
Oh, let's not do that. So our girls reappear in the park in Azubu Jaban, and they're happy to be back and mm-hmm. ready to defend their home and find Chibi. Maybe get a green soda on the way.
Yep.
Usagi looks to the full moon and thinks, please be okay, Chibiusa. And we see Chibi's face superimposed over the moon. And then we get the second best scene change in the franchise so far. To hear about the first, you'll have to become a member of our Patreon. But Chibi's happy young face tears apart to reveal her sulky older face.
I know.
Black Lady and Demando are getting ready to open the Black Gate. Demando takes off one of his earrings, and it sinks into the pavement, and Black Lady zaps it with dark crystal energy. It begins to grow out of the street and gets huge. And across town, the girls see the dark energy coalescing, and they run towards it. But they're stopped by the appearance of Black Lady. She says, "Wise Man has given me a new life. I am the Queen of Darkness, Black Lady." And everyone says, "Black Lady?"
Yeah.
We didn't workshop it. At this, Luna P's antenna begins to flash. And it floats up to her. And she says, "Luna P, you remember me." And Luna P's yellow moon turns into a black moon on her forehead. Evil Luna P!
I know.
We're finally getting that machine gun I wanted. Usagi understands the significance of this more than anybody else, which is rare for her.
Yeah.
She understands this. She says, "Wait, you're Chibiusa? How'd you get boobs?" Black Lady says, "That's not my name anymore." Usagi cannot believe it. And Black Lady says, "I'll use Luna P to make you believe it."
Yeah, pretty much.
She tosses Luna P down and it bounces back up and transforms into an umbrella. Okay.
An evil umbrella.
She opens the umbrella and it starts spinning and she fires black energy that knocks everyone down. And Rei says, "Look at her eyes. She's been brainwashed." And Usagi's like, "Brainwashed?" Like she doesn't get it. But then Mercury's like, "She's been mind controlled." And Usagi's like, "Oh no."
Break it down into words Usagi can understand.
She bad now. Black Lady blasts them again and says, "I hate those who have slighted me. I hate all living beings in the world." Hot topic.
Oh, whoa.
Usagi's like, "Slighted? Who slighted you?"
Yeah.
Cute flashback of her and Chibi trying to kill each other for 20 episodes.
I know, right?
Usagi says, "Your mom and dad, everybody loves you." Black Lady says, "It's meaningless and false." She stabs at Usagi with her umbrella, and Usagi thinks, "I can't fight Chibiusa." But Black Lady shoots spikes from her umbrella.
I know.
She's doing a real penguin here, and she basically pins Usagi to the concrete. She's about to go for the killing blow when a red rose knocks her umbrella aside, which becomes Luna P once more.
Yep.
Tuxedo Mask has been here the whole time. He says, "Even a lovely flower will wilt if a poisonous energy eats it. Open your eyes, Chibiusa." He should have used the puppet. Because Black Lady says, oh, you're all going to gang up against me? Hot topic. And she hurls Luna P at Tuxedo Mask's head, just throws it at him. But he just kind of goes, ugh, and dodges it.
Yeah.
And he says, "Hit her with the thing, Sailor Moon." Sailor Moon uses the energy of the silver crystal to try and purge Chibi of evil. She says, "Remember when you were young? I'm sure your mom and dad loved you." We cut to the future again. Chibi rounds a corner, and surprise! Everybody's having a birthday party for her. It's a surprise party.
Yes.
So I guess she just remembered it wrong. We'll get into it.
Yeah.
We will get into it. Okay. We see Chibi's adult form beginning to transform back to her child form. And I don't know if she's wearing any clothes when this happens. So good luck, Deke, on this one.
It doesn't look like it.
We also see Luna P's moon go from bad to good.
No.
That's fine.
Yeah.
But uh-oh, creepy wise guys arrive to this battle of the bands, and he's playing the hits. "Recall your mean mom and jerk-ass dad. You only saw a surprise birthday party because you wanted it so much. That memory was an illusion. Jeez, this is like friggin' Inception."
Yeah.
He says, "Intensify your hatred." And in her birthday party, the cake disappears. And everyone's lit from below. Evil lighting.
Yes. And their smiles turn to sneers.
Yes. Chibi reverts back to Black Lady with clothes, thank God. And says, "No one ever celebrated my birthday party." Everybody tries to convince her that she's Small Lady, but she says, "Soon, the evil Black Crystal's power will be fired from the planet Nemesis. You and this world will be crushed to dust. I'm out of here." Hot topic. All Sailor Moon can do is watch her go and wonder how in the world they can restore her to her true self.
Yep.
Maybe one of those camps where you send the kids.
Oh, don't say that.
No, not like
that's
that.
That's terrible.
Not like
no,
that.
No.
It's gonna be like camp. It can be like really fun or like real bad.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
Like going to camp, fun.
Yeah.
Sent to camp, you don't want to be sent.
No,
to
no,
camp.
No. Nobody wants to be sent to camp.
No, it's not great.
No.
Right off the bat, first thought. Can I add a number 7 here? Now they're gonna shoot. They're gonna shoot Earth with the thing.
Yeah.
From Nemesis.
Uh-huh.
But but it's going to have to go back through time, I guess. So yes. Maybe this is only like 6.B or whatever. But like, so the Dark Gate will be the conduit for the energy. Because they're 1,000 years in the future and they're charging up their energy.
Yes.
But then they're going to shoot. If you shoot it at Earth now, it doesn't really matter. I mean, the sailors are protecting the thing. The castle will survive. But they're going to shoot it through the Dark Gate. And so it will hit past Earth and destroy and or darkenate all of Earth.
Yes. And then the Crystal Tokyo would have never happened because Earth will just be destroyed.
Well, I got an idea for you.
Yeah.
Why come back in time? Why don't they just attack the Black Crystal in the future? They are now defenseless. Yeah. Now, their only defense now is to stop the Black Gate from opening, but then they don't know if the future people can just continue. It's like Kang the Conqueror. He can come back 10 minutes later when you're still exhausted, and he's had years to prepare for this. Mm-hmm. They need to go on the offensive and attack Nemesis in the future.
In the manga, they do.
Only that little kid with all the pens on his jacket is sitting there this whole time.
I know.
I think that they're going to do that. They have to go back to the future again.
Yeah.
Anyway, got a lot of stuff. Talked about Force Ass.
There's a lot of Force Ass.
We talked about just that. It's so specific.
I know.
It's like when Usagi transforms into Sailor Moon.
Yeah.
She's, you know, quote unquote, naked. Mm-hmm. But it isn't about, like, titillation. It's affirming this is a feminine power and a feminine energy, you know, and she's turning into something else.
It's a
female silhouette.
Yes.
If Tuxedo Mask did it, he'd look like a Ken doll. He'd look different, you know?
Yes.
But this is like evil and beginning of boobies. I don't understand.
It's
on brand. They call this the evil is sexy trope on TV Tropes. But it's like TNA, it's like toddler and arrested. You're under arrest.
Yeah. I don't understand it either. This is not something that, it doesn't happen in the manga. It just seems
really
like, well. I mean, she turns into Black Lady, we don't see, we are not shown her getting
all right
tits and ass.
It's 8 seconds. I guess it's maybe not that big of a deal.
But it's like the animators decided, oh, we got to show this. And then, like you said, they could have just had like some sort of swipe, or she's enveloped with the black smoke, and then
That's how it starts. But then they go out of their way to make sure that we know
this is the same person. Yeah, right. I know.
All right, let's blow through all this real fast.
Okay.
So here we are, Black Lady.
Yes.
This whole turning the good guy against the good guys, making them a bad guy.
Yeah.
You know, we see this in a lot of stuff, I think.
Yeah.
Specifically, we're not there yet, but this reminds me, or the future me, of the Dark Mercury arc of PGSN, the live action show.
Yeah, Pretty Guardian Sailor Moon.
Something that is like, I haven't seen it, but the Dark Kingdom plays upon Ami's insecurities and like sort of corrupts her into being, you know, Dark Mercury.
Yes.
The dog collar's a little much.
Well, this is the character design and the costume is Nako Takeuchi, so if it's too much, then you'll have to bring it up with Nako.
All right.
So.
Well, let's instead hit Cal's Comic Corner, and we'll just run it all down. Right?
Okay.
So there is obviously precedence for this. I actually was trying to think of, in the Bible, does any woman turn evil? Oh, she's evil now.
I would not be able to help you with that.
Taking it back to myths, you know?
Oh, like she was good, but
now
she's
not worrying
evil.
About that. We'll just talk about like recent pop culture. It reminds me a lot of Legend. Where Bing Bong's character, I don't remember. Mia Sara, the actress's character, you know, she's corrupted by darkness.
Yes.
And it is a metaphor. It's a sexual metaphor because she and Tom Cruise, you know, Jumpin' Jack or whatever, have this very chaste love, but he's also, you know, feels like these kind of sexual feelings for her and she can't reciprocate. But then when she becomes, you know, Cleavage Lady, she's suddenly like, oh, I feel sexy, but I feel adult and I feel like I have agency and power over, you know, myself. But then she's made to feel bad about that because all media is made by men and it's terrible.
Yep.
But it reminds me of that. Something that it specifically reminds me of, and these are mostly after, so blame, you know, they're probably ripping off Black Lady, but this happens to Supergirl. I'm not going to talk about the history of Supergirl because there's multiple histories of Supergirl.
Sure,
it's a tortured thing in their universe. But one of the last times they brought her back around was in the mid-2000s. There was a comic called Superman Batman, and it was kind of like a, you know, world's finest type thing. And they reintroduced Supergirl, who had been out of their universe for a while, since the last reboot. And they brought her in, you know, she's Superman's cousin. And so they're trying to get her used to Earth, but then Apocalypse gets his hands on her. And Apocalypse is, the whole thing is about like corruption and turning things dark and evil. And so he makes her into like a slutty Supergirl before they're able to sort of like
get a hold of
her. Yeah. And he tries to use her against Superman. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
right.
So, and that's mostly just, you know, there's a long history of the trope of bad girls in comic books. Another one that is weird. It's actually weird and worse than the Supergirl one.
Oh, great.
But I think that it makes sense in the story is Final Crisis, which was a miniseries by Grant Morrison around 2010 or 11, I think, or maybe 2008. And in it, he was tasked by DC to kind of bring a lot of storylines to a close. But he's a student of comics, and he likes happy comics, and he likes, you know, he wants the Batman to fly a UFO and do fun stuff. And I'm Batman, why are the drugs going?
Right.
And so it was his, the Final Crisis was his commentary on darkness and violence and sex in comics. So in the comic, Apocalypse gets his hands on the anti-life equation, you know, this power that he's always wanted.
Great.
And he uses it to corrupt the entire Earth and many of the heroes. Mm-hmm. And so they take Mary Marvel, who is, you know, literally
such a sweet girl.
Yes, she's the embodiment of like goodness and virginity in like the DC universe, and like shave her head, and she's got a nose ring, so you know she's bad. And, you know, she becomes like, you know, bitchy Marvel or whatever.
Okay. What about like Dark Phoenix Saga? Would you consider like the Phoenix to be like sexier?
She is.
Yeah.
She is sexier. They play that up a lot. Too sexy for just Scott Summers. She has to get a little mastermind on the side too. But it's also, I think that Chris Claremont's a great writer, and I don't think that he means to do anything, you know, sexist or disempowering of women. But you'll note that character does die.
Yes,
that character has to
be
destroyed. There's no way a woman could have this much power.
Oh,
and so we've got to get rid of her.
And power corrupts if you're a woman. We know this.
I'm glad you brought up Jean Grey, and I brought up Scott Summers, because this entire thing is just Cable. Cable is the child of Scott Summers and Jean Grey, who, it's a little different, was sent to the future in order to save his life because he had a disease that can only be cured in the future, but later comes back
to the past
as a middle-aged man
and
meets his, you know, 25-year-old father and has to adventure with him while kind of like not telling him that he's his kid.
That's weird. And he's older.
Comics.
Yeah.
And comics are weird.
He's older than his future dad.
Yes.
In the past. It gets so confusing. I did want to talk a little bit, not about, I think we covered her forced ass.
I wish they'd covered her forced ass.
Yeah, but I did want to talk a little bit about, like, we get a little bit, I think in the past episode, about how much she looks up to her wonderful mother and, like, that she wants to be a lady too.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like they could have emphasized that more, like, throughout the season, just kind of sprinkle that in there.
I can think of one or two times where she was specifically frustrated about being a kid, all the weird times where she wanted to marry Mamo, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
Kids say dumb things like that, and so we don't think about that that being an existential crisis for her, like wanting to be older. But I'll give you a half point for that. That's there.
Yeah.
So if this is a reflection of her unconscious desires, but remember, this is also manipulation as well.
It is.
And we still haven't really decided between you and I whether he's just making her. If all of the things we saw happened, but he's making her focus on specific things. So, like, there could be a time that after your mom told you 10 times not to run around in the rain, and then you do fall down, you know, kind of get up, you idiot.
No.
But they're like, you know, I told you to fall down, you know, so just pick yourself up. Let's go.
Right.
You know, I mean.
I think maybe
she's Walmart momming her a little bit.
A little bit.
Maybe that's okay.
But I'm also.
And then
one
time that they were out of town on space business and they missed her birthday party. And then they immediately like threw her one later. Maybe the day before they leave, they go, now we're going to be out of town. But maybe she just forgot that they told her because she's a child and he's not making her remember. He's making her remember the specific disappointment of the weird lighting at the birthday party. That part seems like an illusion.
Yeah,
Why doesn't he give her new horrible memories? I think it's weird that this show is all fun and then it's taking like this hard turn into like abuse metaphor.
It's really weird, and I don't feel like that's really what's going on with her parents. I think that he is trying to – he is manipulating what's actually happening, and I'm not entirely sure if what we see actually happened the way it happened.
Something must have happened because Usagi doesn't have the power to manipulate, and she just says, try to remember what happened. And so she thinks back to a scenario that we saw that was introduced by Wise Man and we thought was maybe not real, but seems to be real, unless Chibi is changing the fake memory in her mind for it to be nicer. You know? So I think that this stuff, they could have laid this out better.
Yes.
But I think that there is a timeline of things that happened, and some of those things she didn't like because she's a five-year-old child, but he is emphasizing the negative
disappointment.
Purely id-based emotions that children feel when they feel wronged or hurt.
Feeling unloved, like nobody cares about them.
Yeah, insecurities
that sort of thing.
And real hot topic stuff.
I think, yes, real hot topic stuff. I think when the Senshi go and talk to her and Mars is like, oh, maybe, I think that they were maybe planning to do a surprise party before and Mars was like, she's so upset. Let's just, and like, for whatever reason, Jupiter's like, it's more important that it's a surprise. So shh, Mars.
Right.
Which is a weird choice.
It's a weird choice. And is it a cue to us as the audience? Because if I was, Wise Man, I would just edit that out.
Right.
Why do we need to see that?
Why does
Chibi need to see that?
We do not need to see that. Make it as horrible as possible.
Yeah. If that's the actual thing that we're seeing, then maybe it's a clue to the audience that, you know, that maybe these things happened, but they didn't happen exactly. She's a one-girl Rashomon.
Yes. But I do want to mention something that is different in the manga than here. So in the anime, she is a 5 or 6-year-old girl, no questions. In the manga, because of Crystal Tokyo, we learn that the people of Crystal Tokyo, because of the silver crystal, get extended life.
No.
So she is... A 900.
She's a
Kes. She's 900 years old, but she's lived 900 years, but she looks like she's 5 or 6.
She's which is a Japanese pervert's dream.
Oh God.
She's a Kes, like in Voyager.
She kind of is a Kes.
Kes is only 2 years old, but she only lives for 9 years. So she's like 20.
Yeah. Right.
Okay, Neelix, tell it to the judge.
Right. So, but I think that explains more like. Like, she just, like, her body stopped aging when she was, like, 5 or 6, but she...
Well, your precious manga, that is... I don't know if that's some kind of legal thing they needed to do, but that's terrible. Because then she's a 900-year-old 4-year-old, like...
Which would be incredibly frustrating. I would want to be an adult,
too. For almost a millennium, she's been a complete idiot. Like, a little child, you know?
Well, I think she's been... Well, I guess
she... How long did potty train? The Middle Ages was potty training, and that was the worst.
No...
Backtracking is back for an all-new season. Hi, I'm Caliban.
And I'm Gooey Fame.
And we'd like to introduce you to Backtracking, the podcast that explores the real-world inspirations behind your favorite episodes of Star Trek.
From historical events to classical literature to blockbuster films, we go where no pod has gone before to seek out the origins of classic Trek tales.
Did you know, Gooey, that the TNG episode Too Short a Season was an allegory for the Iran-Contra affair?
Yeah, only sweatier. Did you know that the Enterprise episode Regeneration was an homage to the John Carpenter film The Thing?
Archer and T'Pol freezing to death over a bottle of whiskey would have been a controversial ending.
As a dog lover, Archer would not like The Thing, I'm guessing.
Oh my god, movie night is canceled. Join us every other Thursday for a journey back to the beginnings of the Trek universe.
Backtrekking is available wherever you get your podcasts.
No, Porthos!
For Kyoro Kyoro Miru, or Curiously Looking Around, we talk about elements of Japanese culture within the episode. Today, we are going to be talking about street fashion in Japan. So, this was inspired by Black Lady's look, which has a very goth punk feel to it, or Hot Topic. also, you know, with its chiffon top that has the giant rhinestone studded dog collar and the studded cuffs, too, around the wrists. It has a combination, I think, of both, like, feminine and edgy looks that would be right at home with a lot of Japanese street fashion. The design itself was actually inspired by a look in Yves Saint Laurent opium perfume.
Yves Saint Laurent, yeah.
Laurent. Opium perfume print ad from 1994. That featured Kate Moss. So while the top part of the dress is very different, it's kind of a slinky off-the-shoulder type thing, and it's not chiffon, there's no dog collar. the bottom part of the dress is almost exactly what we see on Black Lady. It's got the very long slits up the sides, and it's kind of got hints of hues of blues and pinks in it. And I will post a comparison on Instagram. There is an image that Takeuchi drew in the manga that is the exact same pose that Kate
sure.
Moss is in for
sure.
this print ad. I will do a post about that
sure.
for this week. And so Japanese street fashion refers to a number of different styles of contemporary modern clothing in Japan. A lot of the time when people talk about Japanese street fashion, they are talking about Harajuku fashion. One of the most famous areas within Harajuku is Takashita Street or Takashita Dori, which is actually right across the street from Harajuku Station. And it's a pedestrian shopping street full of fashion boutiques, restaurants, and cafes. And so what I mean by pedestrian shopping streets, they're really common in Japan. They're these street areas that just have different shops, and sometimes they're covered, and sometimes they're not. But they're walking streets only. They're not, cars don't go on them.
Yeah.
And do you remember when we talked about Japanese crepes? Like eons ago.
I love crepes.
Yes, exactly. Well, Takashita Street is also known for its crepes, which kind of started around the same time that Harajuku started.
So people
to get
go
known.
To eat crepes and stare at the weirdos who
yeah,
are dressed up
right.
on Takashita Street.
Yeah, exactly. Harajuku is a district in the Shibuya ward of Tokyo that runs from Harajuku Station to Omoto Sando, which is a tree-lined street in Shibuya and Minato Ward, Tokyo. And that street actually was designed to lead up to the Meiji Shrine, which is where supposedly the spirits of Emperor Meiji and his wife are,
sure.
where they're worshipped.
What are they wearing?
what are they wearing?
Meiji
kimonos.
Period fashions,
I don't know.
Yeah. Right.
The royal finest. Though extremely popular in the 1990s and early 2000s, many trends experienced a kind of a falling or leveling off in the later 2000s to today. And the rise and fall of many of these trends was chronicled by photographer Shoichi Aoki since 1997 in the fashion magazine Fruits. Which was a well-known magazine for the promotion of street fashion in Japan. Although you frequently hear the term Harajuku style, it should be noted that there are actually many different styles and subcultures of Japanese street fashion, and I won't be able to touch on all of them today, but we'll try to hit most of the really popular ones. One of the larger, more recognizable styles in Japanese street fashion is Lolita. Skirts or dresses are usually worn at or below knee length, that's important, with petticoats beneath for volume, also important. Blouses or tops are lace-trimmed or ruffled in the Victorian or Rococo style, and the length of socks or stockings can go from ankle to thigh level and may be topped with lace. And a lot of the times, people who do Lolita wear Mary Janes or boots for shoes.
Sure.
So the most popular substyles, and there are others that I won't get to, with Lolita fashion are, gothic, sweet, and classic. So gothic is heavily influenced by Eastern and Victorian goth style and typically features dark colors and dark motifs such as skeletons, spiders, and bats. Spoopy and Halloweeny, you know, darker makeup, that sort of thing. Sweet is the most childlike substyle and was originally inspired by Victorian children's clothing.
Sure.
And typically features like pastel colors, fairy tale, and baby animal themes. So, yeah. And classic tends to be, it tends to more closely resemble like historical fashion of Victorian and Rococo eras. And the colors are typically muted and fabrics are commonly solid or floral prints. The Decora style originated in the late 1990s, early 2000s, and rose to great popularity. It is, if I don't know if you're familiar with the J-pop singer Kiari Pamyu, she rose to prominence in Harajuku in the fashion scene before her musical debut in 2011 with her hit single Pom Pom Pom, which is the onomatopoeia for when you hit something.
Okay.
It's, if you go to YouTube and you look at this video, I mean, she looks like she's straight out of like Harajuku. It's like bright, fun colors, lots of weird things. Like, she's in this room with all these bright, fun things, and she's dancing around, and she does this dance, and she hits herself, and pom, pom, pom. It's really catchy. There's a Lisa Frank, like, lunchbox. I don't know what else you need to know about the style. So Decora has bright color schemes. Sometimes a specific color palette is utilized, and other times there is a rainbow color scheme. Like, so sometimes it's, like, this person is dressed in all different shades of blue or all different shades of pink, that sort of thing.
Okay.
And neon colors are also really popular. And Decora's name came from the Japanese term for decoration, which is, it's, you know, an English-ifying, a Japanese-ifying of an English word. So it's décoration. And this refers to the use of multiple accessories and decorations in the style. So you have like, you know, you have a purse and you have like a whole bunch of bracelets and you have a whole bunch of necklaces. You have your, so these are a bunch of accessories.
Okay.
You know, like Coco Chanel would look at you and just wag her finger.
She would just have a stroke.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, more is better. And the style has decreased in popularity, but it has a large following worldwide. So, and I would be remiss, though, if I did not mention Visual K, which is a style created in the mid-1980s by Japanese musicians, mostly consisting of, like, striking makeup, unusual hairstyles, and flamboyant costumes similar to Western glam rock and glam metal. I would even say there's a little punk thrown in there as well.
Okay. Is this like the Ziggy Stardust kind of thing?
Yes. I definitely think that there's some Bowie influence in there, but also Kiss, hair bands.
Sure.
It's a lot. And there, you see, I think, a large range within Visual K as well. Androgyny is also a popular part of this style. Like, because you get there...
The Cutie Kenko.
Yeah, right. Cutie Kenko.
Oh, man. I can't remember.
Yes.
But yeah. That guy's a performer. And
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would not be surprised if he's like considered Visual K as
yeah,
well.
Yeah. Yeah.
So some of the more well-known and influential musicians of this style include X Japan, Luna C, Versailles, The Gazette, Meiji Bray, Roy's, L'Arc en Ciel, which means rainbow in French, En Café, Malice Mizer, and Diaoura. So there's a lot. And the term Visual K was derived from one of X Japan's slogans, which was, quote, psychedelic violence crime of visual shock. It's a lot. Seen on the cover of their second studio album, Blue Blood, in 1989.
Okay.
So this was credited as being coined by Saichi Hoshiko, who the founding editor of Shocks, S-H-O-X-X, two X's, magazine, founded in 1990. And this was the first publication that was devoted to the Visual K music scene.
Yeah.
But he did explain in a 2018 interview with J-Rock News that Visual K was technically coined or at least inspired by X-Japan's lead guitarist, Hide, who was an immensely popular and influential musician who died in 1998 at the age of 33.
Hmm.
And his death was officially deemed a suicide.
But
it's really tragic and it's sad, but like a lot of the bandmates don't think that it was suicide. Like it was like after a night of drinking and they found him in a hotel room and he had like a towel tied around his neck around the doorknob. And supposedly this was a technique that they had used for relieving shoulder pain for a guitar strap, and people in the band had done that.
Huh.
So they speculate that it was accidental, that he fell asleep or passed out.
It's like an Elliot Smith kind of thing.
Yeah, because it's like this weird thing. Like, was it purposeful or was it not? And like he was like at the top of his fame, and like so many people like just absolutely loved him. One of the lead guitarist of this huge band that was just very influential on the fashion and music scene in Japan. And yeah, his funeral was attended by a lot of fans, and it's still something I think that influences people to this day.
Must have been a crazy period, like the, you know, late 80s, the 1989 specifically in Japan,
because
it's, you know, you're right at the bubble is just popping, right? But there's a lot of prosperity.
Yeah.
And the Showa period is coming to an end, not just because the emperor is going to die, but also because attitudes and ideas are changing, you know, and you've got these androgynous rock stars running around and coming up with all this crazy stuff. And if I was a smarter person and I wasn't born in America and white, you know, I would love to like write a movie about like that time in Japan.
I think that'd be interesting too.
Maybe there's a white dude's way in. I think they could probably do the like an M. Butterfly type thing. M. Butterfly, 1989.
He's a white guy, but he's
gonna stop me from writing this.
Yeah, please don't. He's a white guy, but he's gonna Visual K better than anybody else.
Yeah. He's got it. Yeah, yeah. That's it. Yeah,
it's the Last Samurai.
Get into it. Yeah, The Last Samurai. Did you know that this guy could, he's just really good.
So the editor of this magazine, Hoshiko, also said that at the time, X Japan, their look was called Okesho K, or makeup style. So K in Japanese, K-E-I, means style, like at least as far as fashion goes. But that did not seem to really suit them. And that is how the term, like, because he was like, no, it's more, you know, visual. So like visual K, which is sometimes shortened to VK by fans because it's Japan and we sure. have to shorten everything,
yeah.
Was coined. So Hoshiko considers visual K as a distinctive Japanese music genre and defined it, quote, as the music itself along with all the visual aspects of it. But I want to emphasize that you can have a visual K style without being a musician. Like, you sure. just have, you just dress in that style.
Yeah.
So it's inspired by these rock or metal bands. And the color schemes tend to be darker and more monochrome. Visual K spans a lot of different variations on distressed, but purposely so. So it's kind of punk like that, you know, like, there are safety pins, but I put them there. And, you know, yeah, like there yeah. are holes in my pants, but I put them there. That sort of thing. There's a lot of vinyl, I feel like, and like leather and pleather and boots. Hairstyles are known to be very large, frequently teased or spiked hair, and just a wide variety of colors. So, you know, like... hair colors that you see on actual human beings, you know, naturally, as well as, you know, your reds and blues and, you know, what have you.
Sure.
Makeup is also a popular aspect, especially with dramatic darker makeup around the eyes. Oshare K is the opposite side of visual K, with bright colors and many pop impressions. So bands under this style live up to the meaning by dressing up in colorful costumes or in decora or pop K style. And many seem to be sporting like a lot of jewelry, bags, cartoon characters, animal motifs, many colorful hair clips and lighter makeup. So, and the music tends to be happier sounding and the lyrics are lighter and happier as well. So bands in this style include En Cafe, Panic Chanel, Ichigo 69, Lolita 23Q, Suji, Delacroix, LMC, and ASL. I don't know. So one of the reasons why Harajuku was believed to thrive as a hub of street fashion was that starting in 1977, the streets of Harajuku closed on Sundays to car traffic. So all the streets, not just the pedestrian streets.
Sure.
And this allowed for a space for pedestrians to gather and mingle with each other. And this is also known in Japan as Hokousha Tengoku, or pedestrian paradise. Which gets shortened to Hokoten. And this became an ideal spot for young people to gather and meet. So, flashing forward in 1998, it was decided to allow traffic back into Harajuku on Sundays. And this is what seems to be the beginning of the end of Harajuku as a capital for street fashion, at least according to some people. Okay. Because... it was not as much of a meetup spot. Like, they had to kind of find other places to meet and where they could go because it wasn't the whole area.
Yeah.
And it was typically on Sundays where you could see everybody dressed up.
Yeah.
And it is also around the same time that international chains like H&M and Forever 21 moved into Harajuku. And additionally, in the early 2000s, due largely to the magazine Fruits, as well as pop stars from around the world like Gwen Stefani, tapping into the Harajuku style and trying it out for themselves, Harajuku became commercially successful. But according to some, that also made it not as
That's
cool
the end.
And yeah,
it's over.
Contributed to its decline. So. Is Harajuku dying? Well, according to Fruits creator Shoichi Aoki, Yes. After 20 years and 233 issues, he announced in February 2017 that Fruits would stop publication immediately because, quote, there are no more cool kids to photograph. So, I mean, kind of take from that what you will. It's kind of hard to tell, but there are less people showing up on Sundays dressed up, and people are not dressed up as dramatically as they were even, you know, in like the early 2000s.
When Fruits packs it in, I mean, that's it.
It's over, man. But, you know, people are like, but fashion evolves and all this stuff. And some people are like, well, why was this such a big deal in Japan? Well, young people in Japan tend to live at home, like, after college even. Like, that's not an unusual thing. So they have more of an expendable income. However, I'm also thinking that with, you know, job shortages and stuff like that, and people having, you know, part-time jobs, maybe there's not as much of an expendable income for kids to spend on, you know, a lifestyle, like, you know, an entire way of dressing. And so maybe there are fewer people doing it because they just can't afford it.
Oh, yeah.
It's too expensive.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I think. You gotta choose between
the mayonnaise pizza and this. It's, you know, if the pizza's gonna win.
You have to eat, so.
Or maybe not. I mean, they're just gonna be corseted anyway, so yeah, it's, maybe you're better off just skipping the meal.
Eating is optional, I guess. But, yeah, itadakimasu with Usagi. What did Usagi eat in this episode? Nothing. We have no time for food.
Yeah, there's no time for food.
No.
And if you ate it, you'd go back in time and it would turn into a seed in your belly anyway. So, right. Yeah, there's no... We're not... When are these kids going to the bathroom? That's what I want to know. Like, nobody's
eating.
Nobody's going to the bathroom.
Yeah,
nobody's, you know, changing clothes. They're just running around in their smelly sailor outfits, you know, in the future. And so...
Well, Luna's got a Febreze somewhere, right? Yeah,
that's part of what's one of her powers. She jumps up and does a somersault and Sailor Febreze.
Yeah, exactly. Just a Febreze Fuku. That's what it's for.
Yeah.
But moving on to villain gauge, we rate a baddie 1 to 5 dark stars, 5 being the most wicked. Not an actual Yoma to talk about this week, but I thought we would just kind of talk about first impressions of Black Lady.
Well, this will be my second set of impressions because I've given my first already.
Fair.
But I would say that maybe in 1993, this was edgy. But
I
now
think the answer is yes.
It's just kind of been done. Like it's, you know, like you said before, if we had spent 30 episodes really building up that the core of her frustration was perhaps her tumultuous relationship, as a 6-year-old have a tumultuous relationship with their parents, but an uncertain relationship with her parents, or her just not being able to reach that top shelf, you know, or something like that. And then like, you know, when she is granted, whether or not she understands what she's being granted a dark wish here. And so the wish is, you know, like legend, it's, she's getting what she wants, but she's, but
be
it's
careful
not
what you wish for.
Yeah, it's something bad and tainted.
Yeah.
But we didn't really spend all that time doing that. And so this is more just like, oh, little character big now. Little character big and sexy.
Yeah.
And I'm just saying, you had a big sexy lady and you got rid of her.
Esmeralda. Yeah, I know.
And you got rid of her.
I know.
So.
I know.
This is just to double it down.
Oh, I understand what you're saying. I love Black Lady. I love her look. But I think it's also like super heartbreaking too, that they did this to Chibiusa.
Probably be fixed next episode. they'll probably fix it pretty fast.
All right.
I just don't like, this is why you have hours and hours and hours of, you know, they spent, okay, so what happens the most in Sailor Moon? Well, them transforming and her hitting people with her stick.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, it's them, you know, fighting a robot, right? That isn't the most amount of time. The most amount of time is them going to an art show or like, or going to a library or a melon soda cafe.
Right.
And talking about stuff like that is like the main part of the show.
Yes.
And then we get pre-recorded transformations and then a guy or a girl turns into dust. So you have all that time to do all this stuff.
I know.
But they spent so, there's too many villains. They spend so much time giving us little cryptic little bits of what the villains are doing. And today they're going to do this, but maybe they're going to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And all this other stuff. And then you have time to set something up where you go, before he even gets her hands on her, you know, the second that he, you know, and plus, I think you can give a six-year-old a choice in what's going to happen to her. But if he, you know, gives her the blue pill or the red pill, you know, or the ball of the sword or whatever, and he's like, do you want to get back at the people you're mad at? You know, once she is presented with that choice, we know after 25 episodes, we go, oh, she's going to take the bad choice.
Yeah.
She's going to choose the power.
Right.
And we would understand that choice because this whole time she lives in this world of adults and she just feels disempowered. And so she would take that choice. Instead, she just wanders off to swing on a swing. And then a guy with a ball that, you know, we don't know anything about just takes her away and she's a bad guy now.
Yeah, I don't.
Even a six-year-old can have agency.
I agree with you. Yeah. And I don't like that either. And here I go again. But in the manga, it wasn't like, remember your parents and nobody loved you and your birthday. No, it never happened.
You like pancakes, right?
Right.
I'll give you all the pancakes on earth.
Yeah, well, maybe she would have been tempted.
I'm in!
But it was more like she wanted to help with the fight that was going on in the future. And she was going to all these people trying to see if she could help. And she just was frustrated because she felt like she couldn't help and she couldn't be a part of, you know, and she didn't have the ability to do anything. And she was just frustrated.
Right. And she lost.
And he played upon
the crystal and she was scared about the consequences of that. And once again, we get into what's going on with the parents. I'm sure that Usagi and Mamoru are perfectly good parents.
Mm-hmm.
But like when a child does something like that and then is afraid to let anybody know. I guess, you know, the lightning and thunder hit right away. But at this point, nobody knows where the crystal. Nobody has gone to her and said, do you know where the crystal is? And she's said, like, she's running scared because of all this. You know, we see this in the dream. Like, she's haunted by this figure with the scythe that's just supposed to represent, like, her guilt.
Mm-hmm.
And there has to be, in the real world, there'd be a little bit of parental involvement in that. There's a famous story that you love to say about me about how when I was a kid and I was in like first grade, I got gum in my hair.
You like to say this story.
I don't. Yeah, it's such a great memory. I got gum in my hair at school and I went to the bathroom and I ripped all the hair out that the gum was attached to.
Yep.
Now, first question is, how dumb is this kid? Just steal a pair of safety scissors.
Right.
Last week, you cut a hole in your shirt with safety scissors because you wanted to see what it would do. Then you got in trouble for that. Well, just take some scissors with you. But anyway, didn't do that. So I get home and I get a bald spot. And my mom's like, what happened? Now, my parents were not abusive.
No.
In any way.
No.
But they were strict people with a strict upbringing. There's another story. Let's put all this in the show. There's another story that I remember that only when I saw this happen did I understand why I did that. And when my mom was an adult in her mid-40s or 50s, we were fixing up the cottage that we have.
Mm-hmm.
We're not rich. It's not a big cottage, but we have a cottage, you know, in a vacation spot. And she was fixing a window and she was hammering a thing and she missed with the hammer and she put a nail through the Freon tank in the air conditioner. And so the Freon blew out of it, like into her face.
See, that's the terrifying part.
It's harmful. It's bad. And she was like, blah, blah, blah. You know, she was affected. She was okay. But her mom, my grandma, wasn't there, but was coming home in 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And my mom started freaking out, you know. A 50-year-old woman was afraid to tell her elderly, tiny mother that she had ruined this old ass 20-year-old air conditioner.
Oh, yeah.
We can go down to the Big Lots and get, you know, $25. We've got a new air conditioner. No big deal. Yeah. But I was like, oh, okay. So I'm not like abused, but for some reason there is a fear of disappointment and consequences in this family that has been passed down from generation to generation.
You were modeling behavior.
Okay, I didn't know that was a term, but now I do. Yeah. And so that's...
I see my own behavior from my parents, influence from my parents. Yeah. But I didn't necessarily recognize that as a kid.
So I see that. I see that in Chibi. Like, Chibi has gone to these incredible lengths to you know, avoid consequences or like owning up to what's happening, and now it's led to her, you know, accepting the power of a black lady and believing that everybody only ever hates her because two ladies that whose names we don't know said that she wasn't a good small lady or something like last episode. So
yeah, it's not really.
So all I'm saying is convincing. All I'm saying is a little more direct intervention parenting maybe after this is all cleared up.
Yeah.
Because clearly she fears the consequences of, and, you know, she's got a king and a queen for a mom and dad. So maybe more is expected.
It's a little
of
terrifying.
Her. But psychologically, and I know they didn't intend any of this, but it's interesting psychologically.
Yes. The hair grew interesting. Back. Yeah.
I have a full head of lustrous hair.
You do. Another part of like her being 900 years old in the manga is, that she hasn't grown into her power. She doesn't have the power that her mother has, and so supposedly she's supposed to inherit some of this
power. Well, she's got power.
Well, in the anime she does, but like so kids are like teasing her about that and are like, are you really your mom's, is she really your mom, and that sort of thing, because she doesn't have like the crescent moon on her forehead. Anyways, there's a lot of nagging from small children. moving on to Sabu or Dubu, where we talk about the most interesting differences between the sub and the dub. In the English dub, Black Lady is called Wicked Lady. And we've already talked about why. Also in the dub, Chibiusa tripping and falling was cut.
Oh.
Additionally,
well, how did they chastise her?
Well, I don't know what they did, but her crying after her parents didn't help her up was also cut. So I'm not really sure what that scene
Remember that time you went for a walk in the rain?
And you saw a frog?
She's like, yeah. Pretty bad, huh?
I know. So,
it's okay.
I'm not convinced. so on Sailor, I think it's Sailor Moon Wiki. I just think it's interesting how they put this. So I'm going to quote what they put. They said, quote, some scenes of Chibiusa's transformation into Black Lady were cut from the English dub. Translation, no tits and ass. So, I love they couldn't say that, but knowing what the dub would not want to show, that's what it is.
Yeah.
So anyways, and for episode trivia, I've got one tidbit for you. In the English dub, this was Sabrina Gredovich's last episode voicing Sailor Pluto.
Oh.
And now we're...
So no more Sailor Pluto.
I don't know.
Okay.
So I don't want to like... look.
You need to learn to deflect questions better. Like Sailor Pluto. Just don't worry about that.
Okay,
right now.
we're worried about that one later. So now we're up to our wrap up and our rating. So I love Black Lady. I think she's, you know, again, truly evil to corrupt an innocent. Way to go, wise man.
Well,
this
has been his plan the entire time, I guess. Or maybe not. Maybe later on he's like, well, Rabbit's pretty good. I could do something with her.
Well, I think when
wasn't Demando in Love with Sailor Moon? Are we tracking that at all? Sorry, this is your segment.
I think that will come back, but, I think that Wiseman had this great idea once he sensed this great power from her.
Yeah. But before that, his manipulation of them would extend to just...
I don't know.
Firing
is
the
beam
problem. Or something?
Yeah,
or did,
right.
did the sailor soldiers prove too difficult? Because clearly he was behind. If Rubeus and his girls had, like, you know, wrapped it up, then good.
Yeah,
fine.
Right.
But, yeah, it doesn't, I don't know if it tracks.
Destroy the silver crystal and kill the rabbit.
Yeah.
Right.
I guess.
I love the Luna P's crescent turns to a black moon crescent. I forgot to mention, so there's another difference from the manga. In the manga, she, as Black Lady, does not want to have anything to do with Luna P. And, like, swats it away, like, oh, like, this is for a child, and I am not a child.
And Luna P, single tear.
Yeah, right, exactly. So another thing I think is interesting is that in the dub, in the English dub, she's called Wicked Lady. But in the English manga translation that I have that is from, it's the copyright is like 2000, she's called Black Lady. So I don't know. I think this character is iconic and I love her and I'm really happy that she's here. But I remembered her being more prevalent in R, like, because she has a stronger place in my memory.
Sure.
And it's just heartbreaking to see the other characters, especially Usagi, grapple with this. Yeah, but I think we could have done with naming this character a little bit better than we did. That being said, I am going to give this episode 5 out of 5 roses. What?
The numbers don't mean anything. They can't mean anything. That's what you're telling me. Because I just, you know, it's not as great as the manga. That Black Lady, that really puts you off. 5 out of 5. What?
I love this episode, though. Like, tit and ass besides.
Okay, let's try to say that a couple more times.
Yeah, I know.
A 2. It's a 2. And the thing is, you know, it's always darkest before the dawn. You have to have some build. You have to have some laying the groundwork, putting the road down before the car goes over it.
Yeah.
But that's not... This is just pulling things out of your butt. You know, and these are things that have never happened before. Like, I don't believe that you knew where this was going where you started, other than having the very bare bones of the manga and knowing eventually we're going to get to here and there and there. And so, sure, you have to add 20 extra content modules that weren't there before, but you didn't, you trusted your formula of a droid shows up, you know, and then you do something and then we just move on. We just move it a couple centimeters forward. And this is like kind of, this is supposed to be a big deal. And it comes really out of nowhere. And we you and I together went back and put the pieces together to say, well, I guess this is kind of this, and she's kind of been like this the whole time, and then this. But we kind of did all that work.
I agree with you, and I do think that they should have laid the groundwork better and done like a...
And they even had the opportunity to... She's trapped in this, you know, beam where he's making her relive all these things. We could literally... You could reuse animation. You love doing that. We could literally go back to points in the show where she was betrayed or disappointed. You know, Usagi left her on her own in a thunderstorm at her preschool. Like, there's all these things that you could have drew from, and said you just created, like, a birthday party out of whole cloth to try to get your point across. And I think it's kind of sloppy. And I'm not saying that we aren't going to save it later and it's going to pay off, but I have to live through this half an hour of the show right now, and I don't think it's worth more than a 2.
Okay. Oof. All right.
Is that our biggest discrepancy?
I don't know.
5 to 2?
Maybe.
Maybe.
I'm not entirely sure.
Check the wiki.
Yeah, exactly. Who's working on that wiki again? So my English title for this episode is Chibiusa's Transformation. Goodbye, youth.
I wish I never taught you that. Okay. Yeah, that's pretty solid. How old do you think Black Lady is?
I was going to say 17, 18.
Yeah. Okay.
So maybe a little bit older than
them. Like, she's supposed to be older than them, yeah. That's why.
It seems sounds like
it. That's why I said the cable thing before. That's what made me think of that.
Yeah.
Okay. I had a tough time with this, real tough time with this, just trying to come up with something that was kind of fun, but also encompassed what's happening here. Because if you just describe this to a stranger, a bunch of teenage girls come back from the past to find their little six-year-old has become a booby 20-year-old and they want to destroy the world with a beam from the future. It's like, that doesn't fit in like a 3 or 4 word thing.
Yeah.
So I had to kind of like shotgun it and just try to spread it around a little bit. So I got edgy of 17.
Oh, come on.
The awkward teenage jeers.
Jeers?
Yeah.
Okay.
This,
all right.
You have to think about this one a little bit. When you to rook someone is to deceive them, right?
Uh-huh.
If you're going to rook somebody.
Sure.
So they plump when you rook them. Okay, should I just move right on?
Yeah, please do. But
this is the one. Too many crooks spoil the goth.
That's it. Yeah.
We're going with that one.
Wow. I never really thought of her as being goth before you kind of brought that to my attention, but she really is.
She's all like darkness, bad parents.
Yeah, she is like darkness and like the dog collar and stuff that. And like moody teenager.
Hot Topic.
Yeah.
All the way.
I know. I had a Hot Topic thing for a while when I was a teen.
I need the pics.
I had a dog.
Pics or it didn't happen.
I had a dog collar.
Ooh la la.
Yeah, I know. It was the 90s.
Sorry about that birthday party.
What can I say? Yeah, my parents.
I know you were looking forward to it.
They never loved me. So next episode, we are talking about episode number 86. Safiru Zetsume. Wiseman no Wana in Japanese. Saphir dies, Wiseman's trap, the English translation, and Brotherly Love is the Deke title.
Damn you, show!
I know.
You stupid titles!
Yep. Every single time.
The whole premise of the show is that I'm not getting spoiled on stuff.
But that's like...
That our doesn't give a crap. Our listeners have to trip over their own feet trying not to spoil me on things they want to talk about.
I know.
Which is why I think that maybe I should leave the social media for this show.
I think...
And just let people do what they want to do.
No, I think
but
we...
But boy, the show itself is really getting in the way.
I do. I think so. Yeah. We've talked about maybe doing a Discord.
We have a Discord. We got an entire Discord.
No, where there are spoilers.
A spoiler channel where I'm locked out and I can't go to?
Yes. So,
even though I'm a mod? How would that even work? I promise I won't go. I can't believe that Saphir dies.
Well, you just don't go to that channel.
I guess. Well, we've got the Discord. We've got Facebook and Twitter and Instagram as well. And we're there as either noob_sailor or @sailor noob. So yeah, check us out there.
Yes.
And... go ahead, spoil me. I dare you.
I double dog dare you. Well, that's our show for this week, and the name of the moon will be punishing you next week with another episode of Sailor Noob.